I'm so glad you're here. This is Avery After Dark, and I'm your host, Avery Ross. This episode, I have three true hauntings, paranormal encounters that will make you question what's really possible. First, we're traveling to North Carolina, where a family begins to experience a handful of bizarre encounters that quickly spirals into something that shouldn't be possible, leaving them convinced that they're sharing their home with something they cannot explain. Then, we're heading into the woods, where a deputy sheriff encountered something paranormal, something that terrified him and had him running for his life. And lastly, we're going to end with one of the strangest stories I have ever heard, a series of mysterious messages that appear to come from someone who had already passed away, some kind of hoax or something else entirely. Turn the lights down, get comfortable. Let's get right into tonight's stories. Our first haunting. At the center of this story is the Boykin family. The Boykins had lived in Raleigh, North Carolina for over 200 years. And in 2010, Ray Boykin was thrilled as his son Dave and his wife Kim had been married for a while and had decided to move back to Raleigh. The couple had adopted a new son, Jackson, who was 2.5 years old. And Ray was really loving this, having his family nearby. The Boykins have a big property, so David and his family moved into a house on the property. Ray also lived in a home on the land. This land had belonged to the Boykins for generations. Houses passed down from one family member to the next. Also on the property, an old white farmhouse built 200 years ago. It sat back on the land. For years, Ray Boykin's sister had lived there by herself, but she had moved away recently, and the home had been sitting empty for years. So with his family back, Ray really wanted to clean out the house. So one day, Ray gets all of his supplies together and gets to the old farmhouse, ready to clean. He walks inside and dust is covering all the furniture. Family photographs remained exactly where they had been left. Ray expected the usual things, stale air, maybe a few spiders, but instead, the very moment he stepped through that front door, he stopped. Something didn't feel right. Ray would struggle to explain exactly what he meant. It wasn't that he saw anything unusual. He didn't hear footsteps or voices. He just said the atmosphere felt heavy. Trying to shake the feeling, Ray got to work. He brought in his mop, began clearing off shelves, dusting, moving old boxes, organizing the rooms one by one. At one point, he picked up his sister's old walking cane that had been left on a table in the farmhouse. Not wanting it in the way, he leaned it against the wall on the other side of the room. He goes back to cleaning. A few moments later, crash. The cane slammed onto the hardwood floor. Ray jumps, looks over, and assumes it just simply slipped. He walked over, picked it back up, this time placing it securely in a different corner where he was certain it would not fall. Sort of propped up against the wall in between the refrigerator and oven, he turned back, continued cleaning. Then, a few seconds later, the cane shot across the room, flying several feet as if someone had picked it up and thrown it. It didn't slip or fall. It was thrown with force. Ray immediately spun around. The room was empty. He was in the old farmhouse alone. Every door was closed. No windows were open. And the cane was now lying directly in the middle of the room. He couldn't explain it. At first, Ray tried to convince himself there had to be a logical answer. Maybe he'd placed it awkwardly. But deep down, he knew what he saw. Not long after this, the strange incidents spread beyond the farmhouse. One afternoon, Ray's son David was doing some work in the family's shed, which was also somewhat of a workshop that was on the land. David was working on putting together a mailbox, putting a magnet on the mailbox lid, one of many projects he had going at the moment. He worked on this for a bit and had to go, but was going to come back and complete it the following weekend. That next weekend came, and he gets back to the shed, and is surprised to find the mailbox still sitting exactly where he left it, but the magnet was missing, like someone had just taken it. He looks around the table, on the floor. Did he accidentally drop it? He looks everywhere, and this magnet is nowhere to be found. This made no sense, as David locks his workshop when he isn't there, so it wasn't like anyone else had been inside. He couldn't find the magnet anywhere and couldn't figure out where it went. A few days later, David is outside mowing the property when suddenly his lawnmower just stops. The blades had jammed and locked up. Thinking he had struck a rock or a tree root, David turned the mower off and looked underneath to inspect it. What did he find? That small magnet tangled beneath the mower deck. He had run it over. But there was no reason for this magnet to be laying in the middle of the yard. Pretty confused, David pulled it free and walked over to show his father. The two men stood talking about how strange it was, and then something happened neither of them would ever forget. As they watched the yard, objects began appearing. I'm not talking about blowing through the air or falling from the trees, simply appearing. They began walking through the yard looking down, and they saw tons of small items from David's workshop. Tools and belongings that should have been sitting inside his locked shed, suddenly laying in the yard, in between David's house and the old aunt's farmhouse, like someone had picked them up and just dropped them there. Dozens of items. Neither man had touched them, no one else was outside. But this was so strange. Ray initially laughed, convinced someone had to be pulling a practical joke on them. But after searching the property, they found no one. It wasn't David's wife. David's son was 2.5 years old and too young to do this. David began feeling very uneasy about all this, and the incidents only became more unsettling. One Saturday afternoon, David, his wife Kim, and their son were all enjoying some time together outside. The house was locked, no one was inside, David was doing some yard work, and his wife was pushing their son on a tire swing right outside their window. Suddenly, without warning, loud music erupted from inside their house. No one was inside to turn the stereo on, so it came on by itself. David quickly hurried toward the house, checking the doors first, and every door was locked exactly how they left it. He unlocked the front door and walked through every room. He found no intruder or explanation for the stereo that he could see. Not only was the stereo turned on, but it had been turned to maximum volume. It was a deafening sound. He switched the stereo back off. The room fell silent. David's looking around, and before he could even make it back out the doorway, the TV suddenly clicked on by itself. Volume clicked on. It was as though something inside the home wanted him to know that it was there. This was frightening, David said. It was unsettling. At first, this was just going on outside, in the workshop, the yard, but now it was inside his house. A few nights later, David was at the house late. It was nighttime, so dark out. His wife and son were upstairs fast asleep. They had been quiet for a while. And suddenly, he heard movement coming from the staircase. In the next room, like someone was walking around on the stairs. He knows his family is asleep, so this likely isn't them. He got up, began slowly walking through the house towards the stairs. Turns the corner, looks up, and through the stairs, he sees a young girl sitting on a step halfway up the staircase. She's staring at him. This ghostly girl frightens him. He quickly runs over, turns to go up the stairs, and she fades away. She was there 1 second and gone the next. David tells his father about what he saw and what he's experiencing, and Ray agrees with his son. There is something going on this property and in David's house. A few days later, it was late one afternoon. Dark clouds rolled across the North Carolina sky as a storm approached. David heard the thunder and walked over to the door to look out the window. He wanted to see how close the storm was. And as he's looking out, toward the old farmhouse, he sees someone standing in the yard, just between some trees. Only a short distance from the house was a little girl. She's wearing a long white dress and had striking red hair. She wasn't running or playing. She stood perfectly still, looking directly at David, locking eyes with him, like she knew him. David said his first thought wasn't that she was a ghost. It was actually that she was a child who had wandered onto their property, maybe lived close by. So he quickly opened up the door, stepped outside, and called out to this little girl. Hey, you. He was especially worried because the old farmhouse was surrounded by an electric fence, and he was worried she might accidentally touch it and get hurt. So he's calling out for her, but she never answers. He begins walking towards her, and she turns and begins running. David begins to run after her. He sees her ahead, darting through the trees, deeper into the property. This goes on for a few moments. He continues to call out for her. But before he can reach her, she suddenly disappeared. Now, there was nowhere she could have gone. She was there 1 second, and there wasn't anything close enough to hide behind. No buildings nearby. David's looking around, and she's simply gone. David saw the little girl seem to be running toward the old farmhouse, the one that his aunt had lived in for years and was sitting empty. He decided to walk over and check out the farmhouse to see what he could find inside, believing that there has to be some sort of connection between this little girl and the activity that he had been experiencing on the property. There was something with this farmhouse, because as soon as his father started cleaning it out, that's when everything began. David enters, looks around, and in the kitchen, he sees there's a photo of his grandfather's sisters, Lula and Petronia. But this image of Petronia really sticks out to David because she has red hair, just like the little girl that he had seen. Petronia was born in that very farmhouse in 1877 and died in that old farmhouse in 1920. David thought back to stories he had heard about Petronia and knew she had a very hard life. She was nearly blind by the time she was a teenager. David spoke with his family, and they believed that this ghost that was haunting the property was Petronia, that she had come back and manifested herself as a child. A time in her life that was easier. She had her eyesight. She could run and play on the property. Now, this isn't one of those stories where the activity just stopped, because to this day, the Boykins say her ghost continues to haunt the property. And although it was disturbing at first, Ray feels relieved that this is his aunt, who is still there, and they don't feel like she's malicious, more of a playful presence, continuing to remind them that she's still there. They feel she is happy, at peace, spending her days playing as a happy child. Our next story. In 1997, in the Cascade Mountains of Oregon, Jeff Boyler was working as a deputy sheriff. Before this, Jeff had worked as a police officer and was also in the Marine Corps. In his years, Jeff had seen pretty much everything you can imagine. He said he didn't scare easily, but he experienced something paranormal he will never be able to explain in the woods one day, and it scared him to death. Jeff had been at work for the day and got off a shift a bit early. The weather was especially beautiful, Jeff saying it was one of the prettiest days he'd ever seen in the Cascade Mountains. So he decided he was going to make good use of it, get off early, and take a hike. Get outside, get some exercise. This area really has a special pull for those who love the outdoors. And it's remote. You can go on a hike and not see anyone for hours. So he got his gear together and set out that afternoon. He had been walking uphill for about 2 hours. It was not a simple, nice path. It was very rugged. So it's pretty intense. You're walking on rocky ground for hours. He'd been going for a while, and he decides to stop to look at his map to try and find a different path to take next. And as he's looking down at his map, Up ahead of him, behind a ledge of rocks, he's stunned to see a person standing there, staring at him. He's shocked because this was clearly not a human being, saying it was shaped like a person with eyes and nose and mouth, but this was not a living human being. This entity, this creature, is locked in on Jeff, and Jeff is all alone in the woods. Jeff cocks his head, trying to make sense of what he's seeing, and the figure mimics him and also cocks its head exactly the same way. Jeff quickly reaches around to grab his weapon he has holstered, and as soon as he pulls it out, this entity creature begins running impossibly fast. It was not physically possible for a human to move that quickly. But as we covered, Jeff is tough and strong. He jumps and climbs onto a tree. Jeff has no fears because he is curious. He wants to find out what this thing is. And he gets up to a point where he is high enough that he can see all of the ground below him. It's fairly clear, and he sees nothing. He looks around for a while, eventually gets down and walks over to where this thing was standing. And strangely, there were no tracks. Jeff continues to make his way through the woods and admits he's starting to feel a bit uneasy. He realizes it's getting dark soon and he doesn't have a flashlight. So if he doesn't turn around at this moment, he will be out in the forest in the dark alone. So he decides to turn it around and head back to his car parked at the base of the trail. He changes his way back down so he can put some distance between himself and this thing. He didn't know what it was, but he knew that it was not a person. He's making his way back down through the woods when suddenly he hears it. A huge loud snap of a tree. He looks off into the direction that he heard the sound, but doesn't hear anything. He keeps walking, and again, another snap. Jeff has this realization that this thing is following him. He just feels it. He knows it. And he realizes that it sees him, but he doesn't know where it is. Jeff then picks up his speed and begins to jog, run. He hears another crack, another snap of a tree coming off from the right in the woods on the side of him. He's terrified. Jeff continues running, sprinting, and it's getting darker as the sun is going down. Every few moments, it was another snap. And it's getting closer to him. He feels that it is closing in on him like it was hunting him. And he continues to try to look around as he's running, but he doesn't see this thing anywhere. And since he can't see it, he hears it all around him. He doesn't know if he's going to run straight into it. He doesn't know what direction he's coming in. Convinced that he was not going to make it, Jeff is sprinting back to the car, and every minute, the snapping is getting closer and closer. By this time, it was completely dark out. And Jeff, like we covered, has no flashlight, so he's just running in the dark, believing that this thing is right behind him and he is going to grab him at any second. Finally, he is within minutes of being back to his car, and as he gets closer to his car, he realizes the snapping of the trees, that sound, is getting less and less frequent. And as he finally got to his vehicle, the snapping stopped completely. And just like in every scary movie, Jeff said he got into his car and his car wouldn't start. So he's trying it over and over. Finally, it starts. He is screaming and he peels out of there. Jeff really didn't think that he was going to make it out of this alive. He felt that this entity in the woods was going to kill him. He's trying to make sense of what happened. And after this, he confides in a sheriff he worked with. Expecting the sheriff to think that he's insane or crazy, but the sheriff not only believed him, but said there have been strange reports of people encountering these kinds of creatures up there quite often. And I'm not talking two or three. There have been 224 reports of unidentified creatures in Oregon in the past decade. We've covered so many stories about hauntings, entities, creatures in the woods. It seems the more remote and dense these forests are, the stranger and scarier the sightings and encounters are. And I find this story so interesting and compelling as Jeff Boyler was a deputy sheriff. He had seen the worst of the worst, and this encounter is what he is talking about decades later, and said this experience was so horrifying, he truly did not think he was going to live through it. Our next story. In June 2011, 32-year-old Jack Fares of Dunmore, Pennsylvania, died unexpectedly from a heart arrhythmia. The condition had gone undetected. Friends described Jack as relatively healthy, and his sudden death came as a complete shock to everyone who knew him, family, friends. As is often the case after a tragedy like this, the weeks that followed were filled with sadness and grief. Over time, life slowly began to move forward, and those closest to Jack tried to adjust to a world without him. But months later, something happened that would leave several people questioning everything they thought they knew about death. One evening, in November 2011, Jack's best friend, Tim Hart, was sitting at home browsing the internet when a new email notification appeared on his screen. At first, he didn't think much of it until he looked at the sender. Jack. Tim froze. Jack had been dead for months. Assuming there had to be some sort of mistake, he opened the message. The subject line read, "I'm watching." The body of the email contained only one single sentence. It read, "Did you hear me? I'm at your house. Clean your attic." Tim was stunned. He couldn't speak. Not because the email came from Jack's account, but because of what it said. Because just days before Jack died, the two men had been standing in Tim's attic. Jack had joked about how cluttered and messy it was. This was a private conversation, one that few people, if any, should have known about. Tim immediately began searching his entire house from top to bottom. He looked in every room, every closet, looked under each bed, convinced someone had somehow gotten inside, but there was nobody there. And if this was some sort of elaborate joke, why? What would be the point of it? How would they know about that conversation, about the attic? It was almost such an unremarkable conversation, neither of the men would have talked about it with anybody. This wouldn't be common knowledge. Then, another email surfaced. This time it was sent to Jack's cousin, a man named Jimmy McGraw. The subject line read, "Hey, Jim." The message read, "How you doing? I knew you were going to break your ankle. Tried to warn you. Gotta be careful. Tell Rock for me. Great song, huh? You're welcome." Couldn't get through to him. His email didn't work. And that was it. The final lines of this message made very little sense, but the first sentence stopped everyone cold. Just 2 weeks before receiving the email, Jimmy had broken his ankle. And at the time that this happened, Jack had been dead for nearly 5 months. All these messages came from Jack's official email, the one that he used when he was alive. And that was it. There were only two emails. And in these messages weren't anything huge. There were no grand declarations. He wasn't demanding for attention or trying to convince anyone he was haunting them. Just two very short messages that were very personal, both referencing details that seemed difficult for an outsider to know. And after this, nothing. Friends and family watched their email inboxes, wondering, maybe hoping that they would receive something from Jack. But no further emails were ever sent. Jack's family and friends looked for answers. They considered pretty much every explanation you can think of. Perhaps someone hacked Jack's account. It's certainly the most obvious theory. Someone got access to his password and sent the emails months after his death. But that explanation raises its own questions. Why reference these obscure conversations and personal details? And why only send two vague messages? And why stop? Others suggested that Tim and Jimmy fabricated the entire story. But neither of the men profited from this, and neither of them sought publicity. In fact, both have largely avoided discussing this incident publicly in years since. Another possibility is that Jack somehow scheduled the emails to be sent before his death. There are programs out there that can send messages at a later date. But the problem is that Jack didn't know he was dying. His death was sudden and unexpected. And that still doesn't explain how one email referenced Jimmy's ankle injury months after Jack was gone. Which leads us to the final theory, one that skeptics dismiss immediately, but believers embrace without hesitation, and that is that somehow, someway, Jack was still communicating, not through dreams or whispers in the wind, but through his email account, something that he did often when he was alive. Sending messages from beyond the grave. Of course, there is no proof that the supernatural was involved. As we know, there rarely is. But more than a decade later, all we have are questions. There's never been any definitive explanation that fully accounts for everything. Just two emails to two recipients and one dead sender. What do you make of this? Was this some sort of prank, a hoax, or was this Jack finding a way to send one final message after his death? This story really gives me goosebumps. Actually, all three of these hauntings give me chills. I gotta know which one of these stuck with you the most. Let me know in the comments. And if you want bonus episodes of this show, join the Avery After Dark Patreon or memberships on YouTube. Thank you to all who have joined. And I want to remind everyone, you can watch or listen to every Avery After Dark episode. You can tune in here on YouTube, or if you're on the go, listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. You know I'm always here for you. Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode. Next time, I've got so much more eeriness and mystery coming your way.